Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
It's May 6th, and we are in Parshas Bo. We're up to page 348, and we're up to Perek Yud Beis, chapter 12, Pasuk Aleph, verse 1. But before we start, we said that we would review something which I've spoken about several times, but is very germane to where we are up to now, and that is the whole issue of Bechor, of the firstborn. Since we've now had the Makah of Makas Bechoros, we've had the plague of the death of the firstborn introduced, and it's now going to happen, and part and parcel of this plague is leaving Egypt, and also you have the Karban Pesach, you have the Pesach offering that goes along with this plague, as we know. We haven't read it yet, but it's going to be with the blood on the doorpost and all that. And in addition to that, we have the first couple of psukim, the first couple of verses right here, which we'll read, which has to do with Nisan being the first month for us. All of these are not coincidental. They're really all part of the same concept. Just before we read further, let's just refresh our memories that back in Parsha Shmos, when Hashem meets with Moshe, and at the burning bush, and then he tells Moshe to go save the Jewish people, and then Moshe goes, he starts to leave. So Hashem appears to Moshe as he's going back to Egypt on page 310, Pasuk Chaf Beis, verse 22. It says, "V'amarto el Paro, you shall say to Paro, Ko amar Hashem, so says Hashem, Bini bechori Yisrael, my son, my firstborn, is Yisrael. V'amar elecha, and I said to you, Shalach es bini, send out my son, V'yavdeini, and he will serve me. And you have refused to send them out. Behold, I am going to kill your son, your firstborn." So Moshe is told to warn Paro about this at the outset, which means that Makas Bechoros is really the purpose of all the plagues in the first place. There really was no need for the other nine for the Jews to leave Egypt. All that was necessary was the death of the firstborn. However, we know that the purpose of the plagues was to show the Egyptians, and by extension to show the entire world, that Hashem is in control of everything. But the real vendetta that Hashem has against the Egyptians, and the real struggle that Paro has, is that he has started up with the ben, the Bechor, the son, the firstborn of Hashem. So Hashem says to Paro, you have started up with my son, my firstborn, I'm going to kill your son, your firstborn. So the concept of Bechor, which we know applies to a firstborn child, there's also the national concept of Bechor, that we are considered to be the firstborn son of Hashem. Whatever that means. Obviously, Hashem is not physical and does not produce children, but He created us. Of course, this goes back to the struggle of Bechor that was between Yaakov and Esav, that Esav was biologically the Bechor, he was the firstborn, but then he sold the right to Yaakov, and Yaakov legally became the Bechor, the firstborn. That manifests itself down to the Jewish people in general. We Jews are Hashem's Bechor, firstborn. What does that mean? And why did Paro seem to reject that? In that Hashem says to Paro, you're not going to let my son, my firstborn, go, so I'm going to kill your son, your firstborn. Seems like there is some sort of a struggle over the Bechor, over the birthright. Back on page 348, where we're up to, I want to read the first few So can the first few verses, and then we'll discuss the whole, all the different issues of Bechar. On page 348, Pasuk Aleph, verse 1, Vayomer Hashem al Moshe v'al Aaron v'eretz Mitzrayim. Lamer Hashem says to Moshe and to Aaron in Egypt, saying, HaChodesh hazeh lachem Rosh Chodeshim. This month is for you the first of the months. Not for anybody else, but for you Jews, Nisan is the first month. Rishon hu lachem, it is the first for you, l'chadshei hashana, for the months of the year. So what is the first month of the year for everybody else?
Tishrei.
Tishrei, the month when Rosh Hashanah falls. That is the first month for everybody else. But for us Jews, the first month is not Tishrei, it is Nisan. So this is the first mitzvah of the Torah. In fact, Rashi, the very first Rashi in Chumash, asks the question, why does the Torah begin with Bereishis, with the creation of the world? The Torah need not have started with all of that. The Torah could have started right here with the first mitzvah, since the ultimate purpose of the Torah is to tell us what it is that Hashem wants from us. So, and he has to answer that question. So this is now, we've now entered the main purpose of the Torah, which is to tell us what to do and what not to do, how to behave and how not to behave. So the first mitzvah is that Nisan is our first month in contrast to the rest of the year, the rest of the world. Then, after that, from the rest of this chapter is devoted to the laws of the Karban Pesach, of the sacrifice, the Pesach sacrifice. So let's hold off with that. Of course, that's very appropriate for today, because today is Pesach Sheni. So we're on the right path. Okay. So what is this issue of Bechar, and how does it relate to the issue of the month, the first month of the year, and also the issue of the Karban Pesach? When is the first time the Torah ever uses the word Bechar, firstborn?
A sheep.
Okay.
It's Cain and Abel.
Yeah, so all the way back, Cain brings sacrifices to Hashem. Cain and Hevel. On page 20. So first it says that Cain brought from the fruits of the ground a gift to God. And then Pasuk Daled, verse 4, says, "Vehevel hevi gam hu, Hevel brought also he, mi bechoros sono, from the firstborn of his sheep, from his flock, umechel vehen, and from their fats, from the choicest ones." And of course we know Hevel's sacrifice was accepted, and Cain's was not, and Cain kills Hevel. So the first instance of the word Bechor in the Torah is right here, that he brought from the Bechoros, from the firstborn of his son. Son is a word that means either sheep or cattle. Sheep or goats. So the first time that the word Bechor is used in the Torah, it's associated not with a human being, but with an animal. And not just any animal, but with sheep or goats. Which animals can be used for a Karban Pesach, for a Pesach sacrifice?
Sheep
or goat.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The same animals that are first associated with Bechor, with the firstborn, are the animals that are appropriate to be used for a Karban Pesach. What is the mazel? What is the celestial sign of the month of Nisan?
A ram.
Is a sheep.
Family.
Sheep.
Yeah.
Right. It's an adult male sheep. Is a ram. Right. That is the sign of Nisan. Mm-hmm. So the Nisan and
is it a sheep or a goat?
Same family.
Not April. Nisan.
Well, isn't Nisan?
Doesn't line up perfectly.
I thought it was a ram.
A ram is an adult male sheep.
It's not a goat.
No.
A ram is an adult male sheep.
Okay.
So, the...
It doesn't taste the same.
So, Nisan is associated with sheep. The Karban Pesach is a sheep or a goat. And the first time the word Bechor is used in the Torah, it is referring to sheep and goats. So all of these come together in our story here of Pesach. That Hashem says to Paro, you are not letting my son, my firstborn, leave. I'm going to kill your son, your firstborn. When am I going to do it? I'm going to do it in Nisan. I'm going to do it at the height of Nisan, the 15th of Nisan, when the moon is full. That's when I'm going to do it. Nisan is represented by a ram, which is an adult male sheep. And the Jews are going to sacrifice a sheep or a goat, and they're going to put the blood on the doorposts, which will signify that I will not kill the firstborn in that home. So, none of this is coincidental. It's all coming together in one general theme. What is that general theme? So, the general theme is as follows. We know that we Jews are the Am Segula. We are the nation that is chosen by Hashem, the Am HaNivchar. We are the nation that is designated by Hashem and set aside and by Hashem. That we represent Hashem in this world. That is our job. Our job is to bring Hashem down into this world, to make sure that His name is sanctified and is known in this world. He is known through us. We do not need to be proactive about this. We don't have to take out ads and billboards and advertising. The way that we do that is
by the way we live.
By the way we live, by following the Torah. By acting in the way that we are supposed to act. In that way, Hashem guarantees that if we keep the Torah properly, then the non-Jews will turn to us and they will say, what a wise nation this is that they keep the Torah. And that is the way that we bring God's presence into the world. That's our job. Now, Hashem doesn't have biological children because Hashem is not biological. Hashem is not physical. Hashem is not spiritual. Hashem is created spirituality. Hashem created physicality. So to say that Hashem has a son or has a firstborn is ludicrous. But as usual, whenever we say anything that's associated with Hashem, it doesn't mean it literally, because nothing that we can conceive of can possibly be attributed to Hashem. By definition, any thought that we have, any association that we can make in our minds to compare Hashem to anything else is by definition wrong. So that if the Torah says that Hashem stretched out His hand, clearly Hashem does not have a hand, and that's only being used because we know what it looks like when a person stretches out his hand, so we can conceive of the idea that Hashem is doing something along those lines, whatever that means. But by the same token, when it says Hashem spoke, Hashem doesn't speak, He doesn't have a mouth, but whatever it is that we can conceive of when we speak to each other, that's what happens when Hashem speaks. And that's true for anything that has to do with Hashem. So we say that Hashem has a son, a firstborn, that doesn't mean it literally, but we can relate to the concept of what Hashem is trying to convey about His connection to the Jewish people the same way that a person connects to their son, their firstborn, their Bechor. So Hashem says to Paro, my son, my firstborn are the Jews. You don't want to let the Jews go. Therefore, I'm going to kill your son, your firstborn. Now, at first glance, that seems very appropriate because we know that Hashem operates through midah keneged midah, measure for measure. You're going to obstruct my firstborn. I'm going to kill your firstborn. Okay. It's a little bit funny, though, because it's a little bit harsh. You're going to obstruct my firstborn, so I'm going to kill your firstborn? How about I'm going to obstruct your firstborn? What's the killing for? Why is it so harsh?
Because he was harsh.
So then say, you enslaved my firstborn,
right.
Or you killed my firstborn, because he threw them into the river,
right.
So I'm going to kill your firstborn. But that's not what it says. You held back, you obstructed my firstborn, therefore I'm going to kill your firstborn. It would seem that obstructing the Jewish people from Hashem is similar to killing the Jewish people. That you obstructed my firstborn, which means you kept them from me, which is like killing them. Therefore, I am going to kill your firstborn. I'm going to keep them from you. But it goes deeper than that. The concept of a bechor, a firstborn, what is so special about a firstborn? Why is the firstborn any more special than a secondborn or a thirdborn?
They were supposed to be a voter in the Beis HaMikdash.
Okay, they're supposed to be the Kohanim. Why? What makes them so special? And it's better be a good answer, because I'm a secondborn.
Because it's like the Bikurim when you brought Tzatzel, the best of the fruit. It's the first of your
own. Are you telling me that my older brother is better than me? Because he was older?
Yep.
Usually has. I can't accept that.
Well, that's why, but even the Torah, the oldest gets plus gets
better. I'm asking why. I'm asking why.
They have more responsibilities.
They paved the way.
Okay, so maybe they have more responsibilities. Maybe they paved the way. Dr. Claire, you have something to say?
I was just going to say about the first fruit. You know, you
mm-hmm.
put that aside.
Mm-hmm.
It's special. You bring that to the
show. Why is it special?
Because the first time.
Because the effort is, when you bring a choicest, you're taking something that you want to have for yourself.
Choicest means it's the best. Maybe the better fruit is later. Who says the first one is the choicest?
Not necessarily.
The most exciting one that was created.
Yay, I got a peach in my tree.
You're sanctifying it by taking it as the first.
Why can't I sanctify by taking it as the second?
They had the responsibility of carrying on their heritage. Before. They have
responsibility
of carrying it on.
Okay, have it with fruit.
Yeah. Well,
it's a miracle.
Okay. The firstborn child makes me into a parent. Right? My older brother made my parents parents. I did not make my parents parents. They already were parents when I was born. That my older brother was special because when he was born, it changed the status of my parents. When I was born, it changed the status of me. But it didn't change the status of my parents. They were parents before I was born. They were parents after I was born. The Bechor affects not only himself when he comes into existence, but he affects those that brought him into existence. The first fruit, the farmer, until the first fruit grow, the farmer is a farmer who is trying to grow things, who has attempted to grow things. When the first fruit appear, he is a farmer who has grown things, who Hashem has bestowed kindness upon. When the second fruit comes up, that's also kindness. But it doesn't change the status of the farmer. The farmer already was a recipient of Hashem's kindness. When Hashem created the world, so why Hashem created the world is a very difficult concept to understand, and we can't fully grasp it. But whatever the reason is, before He created the universe, He was a creator. He could create, but he hadn't actually created. At least he didn't create the universe. He didn't create man. He could have, but he didn't. Once he created Adam HaRishon, he created Adam. Adam made, it's almost impossible to say these words, but it transforms Hashem. It doesn't really transform Hashem. Nothing can transform Hashem. But where Hashem could have created Adam at any time, but when he did it, now Hashem actually put into practice what he could have done any time. The second person created, we're not counting Chava here because Chava and Adam are really one, but once Cain is created and Hevel is created, well, that doesn't change the makeup of the universe. The universe has people in it before Cain and Hevel are created. Cain and Hevel's creation changes the status of Adam and Chava. They go from being created beings who never created another being. Then they become creators themselves. They join as Chava says when she names Cain, Cain, Konisi Ish es Hashem. I have created a man. I have made a man with Hashem. So in a certain way, I've become like Hashem. I've done something that only Hashem can do. I've made a human being. And Chava was the first mother. That had never happened before. So that also was a first. So there was a special status of the first because it changes the status around anything related to that item also is being changed simultaneously with the item. That's what's so special about a Bachar. What made the universe a universe that had people in it was the creation of Adam. What made the universe a universe that had in it the purpose of the universe itself? That was the creation of the Jews. Bereishis bara Elohim, Bereishis in the beginning Hashem created. So Rashi says in the very beginning of Chumash, Bereishis bishvil Reishis, because of the first. Hashem, why did Hashem create in the first place? Why did he bother? Because of Reishis, because of the first. What's the first? The Jews. Because of the Torah, which is also called Reishis the first. Because of the Jews, that is why Hashem created. When Yaakov and Esav are struggling over the Bechora, over the birthright, what they're struggling over is who is the purpose of creation. Until that purpose is created, then the creation itself has not reached the status of having a purpose for it being brought into existence. Once the purpose for the creation being brought into existence is brought into existence, then the creation now has changed. So that when the Jews become Jews, when we become a people, whether you're going to say Avraham Avinu, or whether you're going to say when we get the Torah, let's use getting the Torah for the argument's sake, at that moment, then the universe, which had been created before, but had not yet had the purpose for which it's created. And once the Jews accept the Torah on Har Sinai, now the purpose is here. Therefore, we are the Bechor of Hashem. Because since the Bechor, the definition of a Bechor is that item that it's being brought into existence transforms everything. It doesn't just mean anything to itself. It transforms everything because it's a first. So by definition, a first means that things have changed. A second is not changing what was there before because you already have a first. So since the purpose of creation is the Jews, and more specifically, the Jews observing the Torah.
Yeah.
So when we accepted the Torah on Har Sinai, which is what made us a people, then that is called the creation actually happening. As we know, in the beginning of time, when it says, Yom HaShishi, Hashem made the sixth day, so Chazal tells us, sage the same, Rashi says it over there, HaShishi, the sixth day, with the hay in front of the word shishi, sixth, that the world was waiting, was totally va'omid, it was waiting, it was hanging in the balance. Will the Jews accept the Torah on the sixth day of Sivan, on Shavuos, which is coming up? if we would accept the Torah, now the world has a purpose. And if God forbid we would not, then the world has no purpose, and the world would cease to exist. Because what's the point? Hashem didn't create the world just for the sake of it. There was a purpose to it. Purpose was that the Jews should be keeping the Torah, which will bring the entire world close to Hashem, which will bring Hashem into this world, etc. So the Jews have a status of Bechor, of the first, because we Jews changed the status of all of creation. Not just this world, but also the spiritual world. There was no point in them either, until we accepted the Torah. So our existence is what made all of existence purposeful. So therefore, we are called the Bechor. We are the first. Paro would not accept this. Paro and the Egyptians believed that they were the purpose of existence, not the Jews. That they were the end-all and be-all of creation. The struggle over here is, Hashem is saying to Paro, you think you're the Bechor, you think you're the purpose for why there is a universe. That's what you think. You're holding back my people, my Bechor, because you don't want to allow this announcement, this proclamation to be made that the Jews are the purpose of existence, because you believe you're the purpose of existence, says Hashem, I'm going to show you that you have no connection to Bechor, to being the firstborn. How am I going to show that to you? Because I'm going to kill every single firstborn in all of Egypt. There will not be a Bechor remaining. Every single Bechor is going to die, which will be a clear message that Mitzrayim, that Egyptians, have no connection to the concept of Bechor. They are not the purpose of creation. The Jews are the purpose of creation. The one exception, of course, of the one who did live is Paro himself. He did live, and he lived, and he was a Bechor, but he lived in order to tell the tale that he himself, as a Bechor, will admit that he is not a Bechor. Meaning that he's biologically a firstborn child, but he would admit that as conceptually, as a nation, the Egyptians are not the Bechor. They are not the purpose of creation. We Jews are the purpose of creation. That is why it takes place in Nisan. Nisan, which is the month in which is represented by the ram, which is an adult sheep, which represents the concept of Bechor. Since the very first sacrifice brought in the Torah that was considered acceptable by Hashem was the one that Havel brought, and he brought sheep, or goats, or both. That was the sacrifice, which is the Bechor of sacrifices. Because even though Cain had the idea first, and Cain actually offered something first, but it wasn't accepted. And therefore, although he had the idea, and although he attempted to be the first, but he failed. And the first instead was Hevel's offering. Hevel, who understood that we are transforming the entire notion, the entire concept of a person trying to relate to God. We are going to offer a sacrifice. Where, in logically, one would have said, what do you mean you're offering a sacrifice? You think you're giving something to God? How can you give anything to God? God created everything. Anything you try to give Him is already His. As the Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos, which we read this past Shabbos, you're just giving Him what's already His. But the notion that even though everything is already His, but because He gave us free will, there is still value in our deciding to, so to speak, give something to Him, because since He gave us the ability to choose to reject Him, then when we choose to not reject Him and embrace Him and try to give to Him, it does mean something, even though logically it doesn't make sense. I can't give you something which is already yours. I can't give you something which you could take anyway if you wanted
right.
to.
Right.
And I can't give you something which is meaningless to you because you're not a physical or a spiritual being. You are a being that has no connection to that, and I'm offering you a physical item, an animal. Like, what does that have to do with God? So the whole idea is, on the one hand, sounds ridiculous, but on the other hand, no, it transforms the whole concept that we can still give up for God. Even though what we're giving up, He doesn't need. That was the Bechora, that was the firstborn of all sacrifices, was what Hevel brought. And he brought that which was, that which made him into a successful, not farmer,
shepherd,
thank you. The first of his flock. The month of Nisan represents all of this. The Egyptians worshipped the sheep and the goats. They worshipped the sheep. Why did they worship the sheep? They worshipped the sheep because, you know, remember, we've talked about this before, that Avodah Zarah, that idolatry, paganism, in their day, did have rhyme and reason. Although it was false, although it was based on a lie, although it was foolish, but it did have rhyme and reason. It was not just something they made up out of thin air. It was based on lofty concepts that they themselves were aware of, only they
missed the mark.
Well, they didn't just miss the mark. They turned the whole thing on its head.
Right.
The Egyptians, that when they worshipped the sheep, they worshipped it because they understood that the sheep, which is Nisan, represents this idea of being the purpose of creation. The Egyptians, who held that they were the purpose of creation, they were the Bechor, they were the Tzon, they worshipped the Tzon, the sheep. They felt that that is representative of themselves. In Nisan, Hashem tells the Jews, take those very same sheep and slaughter them in front of those Egyptians. Because we're going to send a very clear message to the Egyptians. These sheep have nothing to do with you. You are not a Bechor. You are not the purpose of creation. You are not a firstborn, not physically and not conceptually. You are merely another nation in the world. And as such, we're going to take this deity of yours and we're going to slaughter it in front of you. You will not be able to do anything about it. And then this very same sheep that you worshipped it because you felt that it was a representation of yourselves, that you are the purpose of the world, that very same sheep that we're going to slaughter in front of your eyes, we're that very same sheep, we're going to take its blood, put it on our doorposts, and with that blood, Hashem will then not kill our firstborn, He will kill your firstborn, sending the very clear message that the Jews are the ones who have a relationship to the concept of Bechor, of the firstborn, not the Egyptians. And so he jumps over the houses that has the blood from the sheep, which represents the firstborn, and doesn't kill the firstborn, and instead kills those firstborn of the Egyptians that were in other houses. That's why it's all coming together over here. That's why it begins with Hashem saying, Nisan is your month. It's no one else's month. It's your month. Because you're Jews. You're my Bechor. Take sheep. Take goats. Because they are also Bechor. They represent Bechor. Take them as well. And slaughter them. And take the blood. And I'm going to jump over. And I'm going to kill the Bechoros, the firstborn of the Egyptians. All of that is coming together here in Pesach. That's why over here we have all these, what seem to be disparate ideas. The death of the firstborn. The first month is Nisan. The taking of the carbon Pesach, the Pesach sacrifice. All of this, the reason why it comes together is because it's really one concept, the concept of Bechor. If you'll recall, when we studied it, we showed that when Yaakov made the deal with Esav, he then gave Esav, before he gave him the soup, he gave him bread. Now, bread wasn't part of the deal. But Yaakov gave him bread first, and then he gave him the soup. So the commentaries ask, why? And many of them answer, for the reason that you're saying. Had he just given him the soup, Esav could have legitimately argued that it was under duress. I was starving. So the sale is not a sale. But he gave him bread first. By the time Esav got to the soup, he didn't need soup anymore. And nevertheless, he drank that soup because in his mind, the birthright wasn't even worth a bowl of soup. In his mind, he was getting the better deal. That's why it says, Vayivez Esav Asabachara. Esav denigrated the birthright. So now, let us move through some of these psukim, some of these verses having to do with the Karban Pesach, now that we know the backdrop against which all this is happening. So we're now on page 350, Pesach Gimel, verse 3. Dabru el kolanas Yisrael lemor, speak to all the congregation of the Jews, saying, Be'osar lachodesh hazeh, in the 10th of this month, v'ikhu lahem, they shall take for themselves, ish seh leves avos, each man, a seh, either a sheep or a goat, leves avos, for the family, for the house of the father, which means for the family, seh labayis, a sheep or a goat, for the household. Now that doesn't seem to make sense. Do you take one for the family, or one for the household? Which one is it? So the Gemara explains, you have to take a sheep or a goat that is large enough to provide meat, a kezias of meat, for every member of the household. Every member of the people who are offering this particular sacrifice. So what it means over here is, you take one sheep or goat for the family. The family could be many houses. But if that family is a very large family, and it's too large for one karban, one sacrifice, then take one sacrifice for that particular house, and the other house will bring another sacrifice. That's if it's a very large group of people. Now the next verse addresses what if it's a small group of people. If the household is too small to consume, to deal with one sheep or goat, the sheep or goat is too much meat, then he and his neighbor that's close to his house, in a counting of souls, that you'll take, you know, together, you'll band together and bring one sheep or goat. Each man according to what he can eat, you should calculate on the sheep or goat. And so the purpose over here is that everybody must partake of it, but you don't want to have too much. This is a woman who is preparing for company. This is her worst nightmare, right? Because it's always, exactly how much should I make? And most women will overcook, overprepare, because it's worse to have leftovers than it is to not have enough. It's terribly embarrassing to serve
the
food.
It's worse not to have enough.
What did I say?
You said it's worse to have leftovers.
I'm sorry. It's better to have leftovers than it is to have none. Because it's terribly embarrassing to... Thank you. It's terribly embarrassing to have people at your house and not have enough to feed them. So, therefore, I'd rather do more.
Right.
And so that's where you get into the whole... You know, that's where you'll have the regular... debate going on often before Yontif, where a wife is just worried, do I have enough? Do I make enough? Maybe I should make another side dish. Maybe I should make and the husband is saying, you've made plenty. There's plenty of food. And of course, the husband's always right. There's always plenty of leftovers. But that's not. It's not. But she needs it that way, because if there wouldn't be plenty of leftovers, she'd be afraid that she'd run out. She doesn't want to have just enough. because it's too risky. What's that?
We're programmed that way.
Right, it's too risky. If it's just enough, maybe there won't be it, right? So with the carbon pesach, the goal is just enough. That's the goal. You want to set it up that you don't have too much carbon pesach, but you don't have too little carbon pesach. Because everybody's got to eat something, but as we're about to see, you're not supposed to leave any over. So it's tricky.
We're going to talk about it.
We'll get to it in a minute. It's going to be right over here.
Okay.
Sesamim, it's got to be a unblemished sheep or goat. Zachar, it must be male. Ben Shana, a year old. Yelachem, that's the word you should take for yourselves. Min ha-kevasim u-min ha-izim, from the sheep or from the goats, tikachu you shall take. The word says too vague, so the Torah tells us it means from the sheep or from the goats. And the age is a year old, and it has to be male. So you took it on the 10th day of Nisan. Now it should be for you protected. You should watch it. Until the 14th of this month, meaning Nisan. And they shall slaughter it. All the congregation of the Jews, Beinu Arbayim, between the Arbayim. Arbayim means the word Erev. Erev means the setting of the sun. Between the settings of the sun. So what does that mean? The first time the sun begins to set is the moment after midday. At midday, the sun is directly overhead. Right after midday, the sun now has begun to set. Of course, there's a long time till it sets, and it's very light outside. But it started that movement towards setting. That's the first point of the sun setting. Of course, the final point of the sun setting is when the sun actually dips below the horizon. So between those two points, that's when you can slaughter the Pesach sacrifice. And all the Jews have to do it at one time. This is why I've told you before that Erev Pesach, that the day before Pesach, which is the 14th of Nisan, was the most busy time in the Beis HaMikdash in the Temple. Because it's the only time of the year that every single Jew, every single able-bodied Jew, anybody who could make it to Yerushalayim, had to be involved in a Pesach sacrifice. It doesn't mean everybody brought their own sacrifice, because as we said, you need to have people with you because you can't eat a whole sheep yourself. But everybody had to be connected to one Pesach sacrifice. And therefore, there were thousands upon thousands upon thousands of sacrifices brought on that day, and not the whole day. Only from midday until sunset. So that's very little time to cram in all those sacrifices. Which is why the Mishnah describes an incredibly organized system where the Kohanim would line up as a bucket brigade, and they in many lines, many, many lines, stretching from the altar to the place where the animals were slaughtered, and the animal would be slaughtered, blood would be caught, handed to the next Kohen, and the Kohen would hand to the next Kohen, Kohen to the next Kohen, until it got all the way to the altar, and then it was thrown on the altar, and the empty bucket was passed back, so that every Kohen was standing there taking a full, it's not a bucket, it's a cup, a container of blood, and accepting from the other side an empty container of blood, and exchanging. And that's what the Kohanim was doing.
Wow.
For hours, the Kohanim were just exchanging buckets, exchanging cups.
Did they cook the meat?
That's coming up.
So I should say it was from noon to 7 p.m.
Well, it's about 6 hours. That time of year will be about 6 hours.
6 hours.
Yeah.
To 6 p.m.
It's right, very around the equinox.
So from 6 hours they were doing that.
Yeah, a little less than 6 hours. So yeah.
A little less than 6 hours.
Yeah. Now, they may have rotated which Kohanim would...
How many?
What? Depended on how many Jews there were. But at the height of the Beis HaMikdash, thousands upon thousands upon thousands, you know. It was just, you know. There were many lines also. It wasn't one line.
There's
many lines. Many lines of Kohanim. Many lines of Kohanim. But that was the time of year that was the busiest time of year. Everybody had to do it, and it was at that time. It was at that time. They would do it. Right. Okay. So the and, during this time, and it doesn't say here, the Levim would say Hallel. That was going on at the same time. It was a real production. This at that time in the Beis HaMikdash. And everybody had to do this. This was even done on Shabbos. The Karban Pesach, the Pesach sacrifice, is one of those sacrifices that supersedes Shabbos itself. So even on Shabbos this was done. It was a real production. Now, the...
During 4 days?
What's that?
During four
one day. The 14th of Nisan. Now, there are... We have to bear in mind that this paragraph here that talks about the Karban Pesach, the Karban Pesach, the Pesach sacrifice, is a mitzvah ledoros. It is for all generations. We can't do it, unfortunately, because we don't have a Beis HaMikdash. But if we would, we would do it as well. It wasn't just for the generation that left Egypt. However, there were some details that only applied to them that don't apply to future generations. One of those details was taking the animal on the 10th of Nisan. That was not required in later generations. Only the first Pesach required taking the animal on the 10th of Nisan. But subsequently, you could take the animal on the 14th of Nisan. It didn't have to be taken on the 10th of Nisan. That is the what we call Shabbos HaGadol. Shabbos HaGadol, that year, the 10th of Nisan was Shabbos. And so that was the day that they took the animal. That was the day that they took the animal, and the Egyptians said, "What are you doing with my God?" Right. And the Jews said, "We're going to kill it." Right. So that, and the Egyptians were powerless to do anything about it. And that's why it's Shabbos HaGadol.
Who slaughtered all the sheep in Egypt?
The Jews.
I mean,
now they didn't have an altar. There's no altar
right,
thing.
Right, I know there was
yeah,
no altar, but did each family slaughter their own?
Yeah.
Was there a shochet that went around?
You know, I guess they did their own. Or, you know, or if someone didn't know how, they would have it, right? Good.
Didn't you? Because remember when we learned about Yosef, his children knew how to...
Yeah, but Mrs. Kaiser is asking, who said everybody knew how to do it? And she's right.
Oh,
it could be they didn't.
Right.
You know, I would imagine most families had at least...
They were not circumcised anymore, so they had lost a lot of the knowledge.
Yeah, they were going to get circumcised that night, as we'll see also.
That's right.
Another
about it.
Another...
Yeah. You couldn't eat the carbon Pesach unless you had the bread.
That's right.
Right. Yeah. But I imagine that there was probably one expert for each carbon Pesach, but if not, then yes, yeah, someone else would do it for them. Fine. Pasuk Zion, verse 7. V'lakhu min hadam, they shall take from the blood. V'nasnu al shtei ha-mezuzos, and they'll put it on the two doorposts, both right and left. V'al ha-mashkof, and on the
lintel,
the area above the head, the connecting part. Al ha-batim, on the houses, asher yochlu oso bahem, that they will eat it there. So, only a house in which a Pesach was being eaten was bud put on the doorposts. If they weren't eating in that house, let's say there were two families in two different houses getting together in one house, only the house in which they were having the Seder got the blood. The house that didn't, they weren't having the Seder would not get the blood. Now here's a common error that people make. The blood was put inside, not outside. It was put inside. If you were standing outside the house, you would not see blood on the doorposts. It was put inside the home. This is a very common error you see all the time when people want to depict what happened in Egypt. So they show the houses and there's blood on the doorposts. That is false. The blood was not outside. It was inside the house. It was meant to be something that the Jews inside could see. It was not meant to be something that people outside could see. The Egyptians knew the Jews were slaughtering the sheep and the goats. They may have seen them slaughtering it, but the blood was actually put inside the house. Pasuk Ches, verse 8, V'achlu et ha-basar b'alayla hazeh, they ate the, you will eat the blood, you'll eat the meat on this night. Now this night is the night following the 14th of Nisan, which for us is the 15th of Nisan. Tzli'esh u'matzos, you shall eat it roasted in fire with matzah, okay? Al mirorim, on bitter herbs, yochluhu, you shall eat it. So here we have a reference that the Karban Pesach, which is meat, should be eaten together with matzah and with maror. Here is where Hillel would argue, zecher lemikdash kehillel, that it doesn't mean eat them separately, it means eat them all together in one bite to eat meat, matzah, and maror all together. And thus, today, we do a zecher lemikdash kehillel, we do korech, we don't have meat, we can't have meat because we don't have a Karban Pesach, but we put the maror together with the matzah, you eat it together. Others disagree with Hillel, And they say, no, it's three separate things. There's eat the matzah, eat the mar, eat the carbon pesach. It's three separate eatings. Test 9. Al tochlu mimenuna, do not eat from it raw.
That's rare.
Or rare. Okay, it must be fully cooked. Uvashel muvushal b'mayim, and don't eat it cooked or boiled in water. That's not acceptable. The meat has to be ki'im sli esh. It must be roasted on a fire. Rosho al kira'av ve'al kirbo, its head on its feet and on its innards, which means the entire animal has to be roasted together. Now, when they slaughtered the animal, they had to, of course, after slaughtering it, they had to skin it. They had to clean it. They had to clean the intestines and everything of that nature. So, when it says here that it was all together, it means, it doesn't mean that it was intact. It means that all the parts of the animal were put together on the skewer and roasted over the fire.
Without, in other words, cleaning the innards.
First clean everything, then
and
put it
on the head.
With the head.
With every, the head.
Everything together. Then you put everything onto the skewer together and roast it over the fire. Now, it's got to be an open roasting. You can't put it in a pan. It's got to be roasted over a fire. Not sli kedar, not roasted in a pan. It's roasted over an open fire, over an open pit. That is how the carbon pesach is eaten, which is considered to be a very wasteful way, very tasty but wasteful way to prepare meat, because you lose all the gravy, all the thing, whatever runs off of it. And that is the way a wealthy person would do it. Someone who couldn't care less, because there's plenty more where that came from. That's the way a person would eat the meat, because it's very tasty, but it is not economical. They were required to eat the meat in a way that a wealthy person would eat the meat, because this eating of this meat was to show their chirus, to show their freedom, to show that they are not slaves. They are not worried about where their next meal is coming from.
The innards were put back into the...
They didn't have to go inside the animal. Everything was put together.
Some of them.
Yeah. I'm not sure about the intestines themselves, but the feet, the head was all put like the kibbutz, right? The innards, right? They were all put onto
pieces.
Onto the skewer, right? Yeah.
Gotcha.
Not where they. Not they wouldn't have to be attached where they were on the animal. Just on the spit.
Oh, okay.
Velo so siru mimenu ad boker. Do not leave over any of it until morning, because again, same idea. Because a wealthy person doesn't have to save the leftovers. A wealthy person doesn't take a doggy bag with him when he leaves the restaurant, right? He doesn't care, because he'll come back tomorrow and buy something else. He doesn't need to worry about it. If anything is left over till morning, burn it. You can't eat it. It's prohibited. It's not kosher anymore. I don't want you worried about your next meal. You're free now. That's the way you eat the carbon pesach. Okay, so we need to continue here, Yud Aleph at 11, with how it's to be eaten and what's going to happen that night, etc. So we're up to Pasuk Yudal, verse 11, and we'll talk more about the Karm Pesach. These laws of the Karm Pesach reflect what is going on that night, as we will see. And we'll talk more details of how it's to be done.
We probably did not ever eat, lamb for generations. Lamb.
Yeah, I do want to point out that this is why on the night of Pesach, the first two nights of Pesach, we do not eat roasted meat. And this is the reason. Because we don't want anybody to think, God forbid, that we are eating carbon pesach. We don't have a carbon pesach. So today, we don't eat roasted meat. And many say not to eat anything roasted. Not just roasted meat, but anything roasted. Even roasted chicken or something like that. Not to eat a roasted animal. Because we shouldn't misconstrue that with the fact that we don't have a carbon pesach.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to torahmediaatlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.